Hey writer, today I'm back with aspiring author Nathan Bateman. Listen in and learn if he chose the funny fart story or the story with a lesson for his first book project.
Welcome to the Writer's Way podcast, where we celebrate writers who have completed their books and inspire writers who haven't. Join Lori and her guests as they talk about writing, books, and life in between chapters.
Hey, writers, welcome back to the Writer's Way podcast. I'm Lori, and I'm here again with Nathan. Thanks for coming back, Nathan.
Thanks for having me back.
You're not scared off yet.
Not yet.
Okay, so for anybody who needs a catch up or needs to remember where we left off, you were wondering what idea to go forward with, an idea that taught kids a lesson, basically, or more of just a funny, fun to read, kids would love to read it over and over kind of a book. So you went off and did the Suckier Stupendous course. And what did you decide?
Okay, well, I don't know. I'll just kind of update people to where I'm at. So it's been a little while since our last meeting, and I am working full time and dadding full time. So I haven't had as much time as I would like, but I think that, you know, other people might like to hear that too, is that, you know, it's tough to write a book with regular life going on. And so I've found it a little bit challenging to keep going, but you know, it's not like I'm going to stop or anything, but it's just tough to put aside time. So buckled down, did the Suckier Stupendous course, and I had, you know, some mixed ideas. So my one main book that I think I want to write about is called I Can Do It, and it has a moral. It's obviously teaching something. And the funny thing was, is that I was talking to Lori after the video, and I found out she had a book called I Can Do It that I didn't know about. And so I was like, don't, that's stupid. But you know, at this moment, I'm going to leave it. And I think that's one of the things that I found out with the Suckier Stupendous course was, is that I'm not sure if I'm going to stick with that title. I'm not sure if I'm going to change it, but my story itself is not going to change. So you know, that's kind of what I wanted to talk to you about too. I got my little notebook that we talked about, my wife gave to me. So I jotted some ideas down.
Nice.
In the course, it talks about writing down or researching books on the Amazon thing. So if any other people are doing this and they've researched it, they'll know what I'm talking about. If not, take the course, you'll know. So I wrote down, you probably can't see it,
yeah,
but if you're nice and close,
yeah.
I've got my topic, I can do it. I played around with maybe, can I do it?
Yeah.
So I wasn't really sure what I was going to do. I found 5 books from that. I also, on the next page, did topic farts. Because that's what my other book is about, The Ridiculous One.
Yes.
So I did some comparisons about, you know, what's what, or what I felt like was. So the 5 books that I found called that are I Can Do It themed books, I'll call it that, there was a wide range. So your book, Lori, was near the top, selling well, looked like a decent, you know, title and research handle, looked like it was pretty good. There was another book called I Can Do It,
mm-hmm.
and it was, you know, 582,000 ranking. So it was not selling well. And it's an older book. So I wrote the years down. I wrote the authors down, and I wrote what they were selling and was using your tool mm-hmm. or the link that you had a tool for. So the second one that I researched was not doing well. And it, you know, whatever. There was another book called From Head to Toe. And so I wasn't sure how that correlated, but when I put in I Can Do It under Amazon.com books and everything, it came up as one of the top sellers. It's obviously by a famous author, Eric Cole, who does the Caterpillar ones and stuff. And he was selling, you know, in the 58,000 ranking. So it's an okay book, doing well, but probably maybe more so what I thought was carrying off of his author name. And, you know, people are like, oh, I like him, I'll try that book.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't have anything to do with I Can Do It, but it was a positive message. So I was like, okay, whatever. And then there was another book called I Can Do Hard Things by Gabby Garcia, and it was ranked about 6,000. It was very high.
Yeah.
So it was doing well.
Yeah.
So I felt like that, you know, there was some that were like, whatever, totally off basis. Some that were a lot better in that regard. So my question to you, and, you know, once I got into the course and once I got in, you know, after the course and started researching on my own, I started to find, you know, there was a ton of discrepancy for title searches. And so I was not sure if, you know, as we progress, when I try to market my book, you know, because marketing is going to come into this, is like, how important is the title? Like, is the title the main thing? That's where you're going to get the most views, the most hits, the most researches, because nobody knows who I am. They don't know any book that I've written. I'm a nobody online. And so is it strictly the title that has to be punched into Amazon so they can find me? Because, you know, otherwise I don't know how they can find it.
Yeah. So the Amazon system is actually really sophisticated. And when you put all the information into the, like, your back office kind of thing, your dashboard area, you put your title, you know, the author name, the illustrator, and then there's something called the 7 keywords. And this is known as your metadata. So you also put the grades and the age range. And so that's why in the course, I suggest you sort of compare those as well. But the metadata keywords is when people type in book about I can do it. And probably they don't use those words, to be honest.
Right.
It's more like, how can I help my child? How can I help my kid? Yada, yada, yada. And so those 7 slots where you put your metadata keywords is where you put what you want your book to come up for when people search.
Okay.
Is that a little convoluted? So like how to help kids or empowering kids or make kids more self-confident or whatever. But so that's how they'll find you. So maybe there might be 1 keyword in your title. Like if you had, I can do it in the metadata, I can do it in your title, then your book's more likely to come up. But chances are people aren't going to be searching for that. I don't think they search for that when they find my book. It's more like, how do I help, or books about.
Right.
So the title is not a make or break thing. And a funny story about Gabby Garcia's book. So I've been planning the I Can Do It book since the fall, since last year, because it's dedicated to a friend of mine. And I went to publish it around September, and Gabby had published hers right at the end of September, and mine was going to come out at the end of October. And so I had to do a last minute title change. And you don't have to do that. I'm not saying everybody has to do that, but she, you know, she came out with I Can Do Hard Things, and that was my book, I Can Do Hard Things. And I thought, we're in the same genre, we're in all the same categories, you know, like our books are beside each other. I just didn't feel like I could put I Can Do Hard Things out a month after she put I Could Do Hard Things out. And in the end, it might have been fine. As you can see, there's lots of books with the same title. It isn't a make or break. You can't copyright a title. So you could have 100 I Can Do It books. I can't say anything about that to anybody, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a funny story, because she came out with I Can Do Hard Things. And I was like, so I know what you're saying when you're like, should I or shouldn't I keep that? But it, the title isn't the main thing you need to be worried about.
Okay, so that's something that I'll come back to. I might change it. Yeah. I might not. Like, you know, I think that in the research that I did, you know, just for people's interest, I went over the topic of farts and stuff.
Yeah.
Lots of those books, they were ranked okay. They were decent books, but I think that there were very, very few that were exceptionally high. I think like the only one that I found that was like astronomical, it was ranked 398th, was the My Butt Has a Crack in It book or whatever. It's just so funny, you know, a newish one or whatever. So I'm going to steer away from that one, I think, for my first book, because I know that there is an investment, like a monetary investment, to get a book published. And like at this time, I don't have money just to say, I'd like to print off 5 books. And if one of them doesn't sell, whatever, I printed off a book that I want, it's great. One day, maybe, if my books are really good and they do sell, then maybe I'll write books that have nothing to do with anything, and I don't care if they don't do well. But for the first one, I felt like it was a better trend, you know, using that tool that, you know, things with the message do resonate with, especially like in the, you know, almost all of these people, as I was doing the research, have had a background in education, you know, lots of teachers, psychologists, counselors, all these different things. So I know that there is, you know, a group of people and, you know, parents out there who are looking for positive stories for their children. And I think that to myself, you know, what I have in my head. I didn't write anything down in my book again. I just kind of build my story in my head. But what I've got, I feel like it's a positive message. It's upbeat, but it's also funny. And yeah. So I feel like I can combine that and make it a really good story and stick to a topic that is going to be successful, which is hopefully the case. And that's what I would like to do. So
I think that's probably the smartest choice. Especially starting off, like you said, in a couple of years, you might build up a readership or you might have a really good following and you could put out anything and people will love your style and love how you make their kids feel. But starting out, if you have some kind of benefit or message that will speak to parents and teachers and counselors and they say, yes, that's what I need. My kid needs help with whatever that is, you know, the positivity or whatever route you're going. I think that books with those types of benefits are always going to do better. So, and for the title, you could put your series. You had talked about a series. So like Mindful Mantras.
I noticed that quite a bit is that almost every story has some kind of series tied to it. And I think that's a really good idea because, you know, it can allow you to explore a bunch of different techniques or topics that are going to help people. And if it's in this, you know, children help, and that's, you know, the books that I researched and I found, like you were saying, is they were all in the, you know, 5 to 12 age group, maybe a little older. And most of them paperback. Some of them were only hardcover, but I tried to keep it in the same, you know, genre and style of book that I'd be doing. So it was, I don't know. I felt like based on that research, I was able to get a good idea and say, this is the right direction. Let's go with that.
Awesome. And that's the whole point of it, is just to make that choice and be able to move forward.
Yeah.
And put the fart book like in the parking lot for next year.
It'll be someday. So
are you gonna just do that one yourself?
Right, my kids can enjoy those stories at home.
Yeah. I mean, all kids like that, but are parents searching for that? Are parents searching for you know, more books about parts for my kids?
Yeah, for sure.
Probably not.
Right.
Okay, so what's next?
Okay, so for me, I'm not 100% sure what's next, but in my mind, I'd like to write down what I've got in my head. So we've got a little trip coming up. My wife and I are going to go see her family in Portland. So no kids. They're staying at home with the grandparents. So we are off on our own for a bit. And that'll give me some time to sit down and write what I would say is my first copy for the garbage, as we talked about last time. And whether it's bad or good, whatever. I'm just going to get it down on paper. I'm going to write my ideas down. You know, one of the things that I have thought about in my head and I haven't put it to paper yet is that, you know, on those books that I was researching, they were in that 28 to 50 page range. So I need to say, you know, do I have enough material to fill that many pages, or I might have too much material to, and the pages are now like this much data or, you know, words and typing. And it's just like, that's no longer a kid's book. The kid can't even follow it anymore. It's too much.
Right.
So I might need to cut it down. I might need to expand it, but I think that get it on paper and say, okay, I'm going to block out 32 pages, write the story, see what I think. Mm-hmm.
And remember your 32 pages, like the first page is the title page.
Right.
And then the next one is the copyright and then the dedication and then it starts. And then at the end you can have your bio. And some people do, you know, a stanza on the, you know, the left-hand side and then the picture on the right. And the right, if you go and look at your kids' books, so sometimes there's no picture on the side. And then there's just a picture on the side. So if you're worried about having too little, as long as the story gets told, moves forward, makes sense, all that kind of stuff, you can make up pages, like with your illustrations and that.
I was going to say, I think I talked to you, and I don't know if I talked about it on the podcast last week or if it's just been in talking to you outside of that. But for me, a large part of the story will be told through pictures as well. So my words will convey a message, but the pictures will also inspire some imagination, because a lot of the storytelling in my head, I can see it in my head and visualize it and be like, this is awesome. You know, like I can see exactly, you know, there's you know, maybe facial expressions or body language that present a point that can't be captured in the writing, and it will enhance it with, you know, the combination of the two. So
absolutely. This is exciting. You're ready to write it down.
I know, I got to get it down. So, and then from your perspective, is that just my next step? Is there anything else I need to do?
Nope. Absolutely. So I would say get it written. Okay. Be okay with it being more frustrating than you think it might be, even though you feel like it's all in your head. So a lot of times you sit down to write and then it's stare at the wall time, and that's okay.
Yep.
but you do need to just write something down because you can't edit nothing. A lot of people want to write a sentence and then edit. Oh, I made that spelling mistake. That doesn't sound right or whatever. I highly discourage that. So if you can, let it flow, let it all come out. The ideas will be better that way. And even if it's tons or just a little bit, and then don't edit it even then right away. Go for dinner in Portland or I don't know what you do in Portland. So what's that?
I said, I don't know what we do there either. I'll just be hanging around. So whatever.
So leave some time, so leave some chunks. So chunk out, you know, an hour or two to write. And if you can get it written, like get the story written. Yep. And then leave it for 24 hours. And maybe it's 1 or 2 hours every day that you're there or something. And then read it again. And your first step, I would read for comprehension. So is there a beginning, middle, or an end? Is there a bit of a problem? Or what's happening in the story? Does it make sense? Will it make sense to people as they go through it? And then you edit for, you know, spelling and grammar and that kind of stuff. And then you go through it again. So, you know, a day apart, and now it's, is it too long? You know, can you start in your computer chunking it like into two lines here, where it would go on a page more. And there's lots of creative ways you can put it on the page. It doesn't all have to be in a chunk. So start thinking about stuff like that. And at that point you might have to really cut down your words. So a lot of people will write and it's stream of consciousness, which is fine for your first draft. But there's a lot of filler words when you do that.
Right.
And I love the way you're talking about, you're already planning so much through the illustrations and the characters' expressions and things. And so to me, you're already planning, like in the writing world, we say show, don't tell. So instead of saying he felt angry, you know, if you have the kid that is clearly angry from the illustration, you don't have to say that.
Right.
And so a lot of people, when they do the writing, he felt angry, he said this, he said that, and they, you know, and they go on and on, and it's too much words and too much filler, but you can do so much with your picture. So I feel like that you won't do that because you're already planning to do so much through your illustrations. So do try to capture as much of what you picture it being in your head, because it's always easier, I think, to convey what you're talking about, especially if it's a month or two down the road. It's going to be easier to convey to an illustrator, this is what I was thinking. And then it will be a collaboration, so it might not be exactly, and this is getting ahead of ourselves, but you'll want an illustrator who's open to that, obviously. So some illustrators just want the words and they totally want to interpret it themselves. But I feel like, especially with your first book, you spend so much time thinking about it and picturing it in your head that you really know what it wants to look like.
For sure. And
so it's important. You want that to come through. You want your vision to come to life, so.
Yeah, and I get... Obviously that is down the road and stuff, but that like comes to my mind all the time is just like, how do I make the illustrator get what I want onto the page, but how do I let them have the creativity that they want? And I think that's important. And we can cover that, you know, later.
Yeah.
But good things to think about. When I write my first draft, what I'm going to do is I think I'm just going to write it all down. And then I'm going to actually take like my book and label 1 to 25 or whatever, make the book 28 pages or 29 pages or whatever, and then like start, you know, placing it on my book. And so I can see it in my book. It won't have pictures. I'll jot down whatever little word, like, okay, picture like this, you know, have a side note if I have an idea of a picture of what I want it to look like.
Yep.
And then that way I can remember it. I'll remember it anyway, but I think that'll help me get a good idea of what the book looks like and what I can do from there. So I think those are good next steps. I'm excited. I will obviously have to buckle down and get it done with vacation. So it's exciting.
It's exciting. You're right, though. As soon as the excitement wears off just a little bit and real life creeps in a little too much, it's hard to make time and hard to get that excited feeling back and just sit down and get it done. So it's a good thing you have me reminding you and sending you texts.
I know.
Everybody will want that, right? No.
Absolutely.
if you get it written and you feel like it's in a good place and it's all ready and we don't have a chance to talk again, the next step, what I would say, is read it to kids. So not your own kids that depend on you for like living and food and stuff. If you can, other people's kids. Or even like send it to a friend and get your friend to read it to their kids. or even get them to record it, you know, in their phone. There's a lot of voice recording apps. They can speak it and then send you the recording. And all of those things help. So if kids are listening to you read the book, you don't have pictures yet, obviously. If they're clamoring to see pictures, if they're standing up and going behind you like, I want to see, because they always want to see, then you know they're interested and it's good. But sometimes you'll read it and they'll leave. Because, right, kids are pretty honest.
I have one kid that I won't read it to because he'll be leaving no matter what I read to him.
Yeah, your little one. Yeah. Yeah, he'll like it when there's pictures. But sometimes it is in the telling, but that's really obvious. Like, I have some people in my course, they were like, yes, I read it to a group of kids and half of them left, so I'm rewriting it. And, like, you know, it's better to do that now, even though it hurts your feelings, than after you pay $2,000 for an illustrator. So if you get to that point and you feel like it's in a good space, send it to some friends, have them read it. And having other people read it out loud helps you with the cadence of your sentences and your phrases, because other people won't say it the same way you've been saying it in your head for 3 months. Does that make sense? So then it helps you just to see if other people are going to read it the way that you think they're going to read it.
That's a good idea, because I'm excited about that. Like, when I read stories and stuff, my wife's always like, oh, you should be an orator. You should tell stories. You don't need to, you know, whatever. Because, like, I like to get into it and stuff. So obviously, yeah. I have a certain style that I want to tell stories. But then if you give it to someone else and they read and they're like, boring. You're like, well, I could make the story interesting if I read it, but you can't make it interesting. So I want it to be interesting that they can do. So, you know, I don't know. I'd like,
that'll, you know, be good down the line.
I'm sure other writers.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, that'll be good down the line. You can record it, or you can do like a YouTube channel and you can read it to kids, and that can come into play. But for somebody who buys it and reads it to their kid, you want to make sure that it's going to be good. What? I was interrupting
you. Yeah, I was going to say, maybe. Sorry, no, it's fine. You know, I don't know. I find it a little bit, not overwhelming, but a little bit scary to read it to, you know, people that I like. Like, if I read it to somebody who I don't know, I don't care if they don't like the story, but it's like, I'm like, man, I'm going to write my story. I'm going to read it to my wife, and I already know she's going to be like, oh, you need to change this part right here. It's horrible. And I'm like, oh dang it. Yeah. But, you know, and that's good though. You need it. And like you said, it's good to get it out there before you get it published, before you get an illustrator. And then you find out people are like, it's not that good.
Yeah. The pictures are great, but the story kind of sucks.
Story can work.
If you want to read it to me, I'll read it to my kids and let you know.
Yeah, I'm only gonna do that. I'll send it around to people who have kids and just be like, hey, read it to your kids, see what they think, give me some input, get my thick skin on and just give it to me and tell me what sucked. And
well, and some kids, like, you can take some of the advice, some of it will resonate and be like, yeah, that'll really make the story better. And sometimes it's just kids like, I don't like anything without a dragon, so this story sucks. Like, you can, don't take all of the advice when it's coming from kids, but
yeah,
for sure. It will also be valuable as the parent saying, this part they were all so into, but this part, you know, not so much. Or it took a few pages for them to get into it. And then, like, all that kind of stuff is what you want to ask. You know, did they like the whole thing? Were they more into the beginning? Or did they really like the characters? Or all that kind of stuff.
All right. Sounds good. So I don't know. I feel like I've got my next steps ready to go. And my next little plan. Is there anything else you think I need to do, or you think?
No, I think it's really good just to concentrate on this part. Okay. And so some of the suggestions about writing and editing and leaving it and all that kind of stuff are in the course. If you feel like, oh, Lori was so smart, what did she say? It's in the course, so you can go look.
Okay.
But yeah, I think you're doing great. I'm super excited. And Portland, big goals for Portland.
That's right. It's a writing retreat, I think.
Oh, I like it. Cool. Okay. Well, we'll schedule something when you're back and it's written and you're wondering what to do next. And good luck.
All righty. Well, appreciate it. And we'll see how it goes in a few days or whatever. So.
Okay. Cool. Okay. Right. Talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening today. So what do you think? Will Nathan actually get the book written while he's away? I know that I have great intentions for all of my vacations, but they're rarely realized because I'm usually just too busy. If you subscribe to the podcast, you'll find out if he did get the first draft written or not, and if he got any farther than that. Leave me a comment below and let me know if you think his choice of going with the book that has more of a lesson instead of the fart book is a good choice or not. I'm curious if Nathan has inspired you to finally get your kids' book published. Look on creativewriter.com, take the free course that Nathan talked about today, and then sign up for the 30-day action plan. See you next week here on the Writer's Way podcast.
You've been listening to the Writer's Way podcast. For show notes, links to guests' information, and to learn more about the Writer's Way, check out laurieryder.com. Until next week, enjoy this chapter of your life.